This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Winding its way through Paris is the Seine River. Is it too much to say that the Seine is part of the soul of Paris? Astrid Clements, your solo travel advisor, investigates how the Seine historically plays a role in the founding of Paris and what a visitor can expect of the Seine today. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. We're going to talk rivers, cruising, walking, bridges, and ultimately how to balance, quote, touristy things with authentic experiences. Is it fair to say that the Seine is one of the defining features of Paris? And can you describe the river and how it relates to Paris?
Well, the Seine, like the Eiffel Tower, is really the iconic symbol of Paris. It's the hub. It's where Paris started in the Middle Ages. It was really one of the oldest trade routes into Europe. The Parisi tribes were the original tribes that, you know, actually settled there. You had the Celts, the Vikings, the Romans. And really, this is how this interior part of France and specifically Paris came to be. You know, most all of the European cities that are the great cities that are inland were along some waterway that had enough distance into the interior to make it worthwhile. So the Seine is it for France and specifically for Paris. Now, I want to give you a few little history or interesting facts, a little history about the Seine, because we're going to talk about why it is such a emotive kind of magnet that has inspired not only the city to be established there, because, you know, it could have been somewhere else along the Seine that Paris came up, but they just, you know, the Parisi tribes and the various different tribes and peoples that came through this area and conquered it and settled there. There's something about also this place. So I want to give you a few little facts so it'll kind of set the stage for, you know, what this whole podcast is about and, you know, why I took this dinner cruise on the Seine, etc. The first name of the Seine was the Sequana. Now, that doesn't sound French at all. It was basically Latin or Roman, and it means goddess of the river. Ooh. So you see, from the very beginning, this river had a kind of feminine power or a power that was godlike or goddess-like. So I found that kind of interesting. The river itself starts in Burgundy or Burgundy, and it flows to the English Channel. Now, I thought it flowed the other way. But it starts in Burgundy and goes to the English Channel. Now, ships can only go to Rouen. And from Rouen all the way through Paris to where it ends in Burgundy, it's only the kind of commercial tugboats and commercial barges and things like that. And I find that very interesting because, well, you know, if you go to some of the on some of the other rivers in Europe, specifically like London, you see all these barges and these commercial barges in Venice and everywhere, and you think, golly, that just seems so much rigmarole. All these little, you know, it's like a bunch of cars or whatever. But there's a flow to all of that. It kind of keeps a place not as industrialized and overrun, but it still is vibrant, and it's vibrant with business. So that's what the Seine is all about after Rouen. And I think that that's important because you don't have all of these huge, massive docks and these lots of these commercial, industrial type zones built on it. So that's, you know, that to me is part of why this river still is so nice and compelling. But the city did evolve around the river, And some of the most important structures through the years obviously would have been built on the Seine and are there. You have the magnificent Louvre. That, to me, is one of the most magnificent buildings that I've ever seen. If you really study all the detail on the outside of that, and I'm married to an architect, so that has made me even more sensitive to a lot of things that go on architecturally. Magnificent building. The Notre Dame Cathedral, also a very iconic symbol of Paris, and with the flying buttresses and everything, and the use of Gothic, and how that was in France. Because when I think of France, I don't think of Gothic that much, but they had quite a bit of that during the Middle Ages and a little bit after. So it's a beautiful statement up on the hill, and it's one of the things that makes Paris just Paris. So that's there, of course, the Eiffel Tower. You have the Musée d'Orsay, which was the former train station, that is still a beautiful building. I mean, train stations can be beautiful, but this one is, to me, especially beautiful. And now that it is actually a museum, they've made it just the best it can be. You have the Tuileries Gardens, which these gardens, they have been depicted in so many paintings and novels and everything. When you start walking on those gravels and you see the little, not Ferris wheel, what are those round things? I can't think of.
Merry-go-round
and everything. You just kind of sink into a state of mind that is quite nice, quite elevated. So that's right along the Seine. You can, spend a whole day in the Tuileries Gardens, picnicking and, people watching, walking along the Seine. It's beautiful, even though, it's not totally modern life, but it's a nice escape and it's still, current. So that's along there. Then you have 37 bridges in Paris that go over the Seine. Some of them are very historic and very beautiful. You have 4 walking bridges, which is also quite nice. And one particular one that everybody, who wants a boyfriend or wants to be married or wants their true love to, truly love them, they'll go along this bridge. It's called the Pont des Arts, or the Padlock Bridge, which they're discouraging it now. There's so many padlocks that are on this bridge that it's compromising the structure.
I heard it was like breaking down the
it's rough.
The railings.
Yeah. But what the idea is you make your romantic wish, and you padlock it and throw the key in the Seine. So, I mean, that doesn't go on in Vienna along the Danube. At least I don't know it does. It's probably copied now in other cities. But still, this is a real Parisian thing. You've got the bridges. And then you also have now, which I think it was done in the 80s or 90s, you have what's called the Paris Pelages. And this is very popular. This is when the city of Paris and the French government, right before the summer, they take and put sand on all of the paved banks along the Seine. And they put beach chairs out, umbrellas, palm trees. And so what you have is like an artificial beach on the Seine. There's entertainment out there. People love to come and sunbathe. I mean, when I first heard about it, I thought, that's not going to work. Who's going to do that? Nobody wants to sunbathe on the river. It's just it didn't equate to me. I mean, it is so popular. And really, it's the only real artificial beach in Europe. So that's really, I thought that was also very It gives you an idea of how the Parisians in France, they're connected to this river. They're connected to their city. And, you know, they do things that they want to do. So if they can't go to the Riviera or some other beach, they have a beach down in Paris. They even have a swimming pool barge, a huge barge on the Seine. So from the Middle Ages to, you know, it did start like in the 18th century, mid 18th century. It was really kind of a party place and a place to seen and be seen. A lot of paintings, you'll see older paintings of the women dressed so fine with their babies or their children, and you'll see the river and everything. I mean, it was the place to go and party and seen and be seen. And then, you know, it also was a place where people washed their clothes and they took baths. So, you know, that kind of all stopped around the, you know, early 20th century. But it really has always been somewhere where the Parisians go. And I consider it really the soul of Paris. I know people think about it and they want to kind of feel like, why has this river, why is it always, you know, so part of what you see in Paris, you do in Paris, Paris itself. That's for all of these subtle reasons that I've just explained to you and gone into some of these historical facts. It's still there. The goddess of the river, it has this kind of feminine power to it, and it is really part of what makes Paris so still. Oh, I love Paris. That's all I can say. I love Paris. If I have a next lifetime, I want to live in Paris. So, but, you know, the river itself has two distinct banks with two distinct flavors. And they're different. How do I say that, Catherine?
Arrondissements.
Arrondissements. Each one has a little bit different flavor in itself. But the right bank is really more the elegant, sophisticated, old world Paris. And then the left bit where you have Place Vendôme, the Louvre, Tuileries Gardens. Then on the left bank, or Rive Gauche, is really where Parisian bohemians and the counterculture started. And this has always been a very creative, break the rules but still cool area of Paris. It's just kind of where the new cool comes out of. And very intellectual, too. But artists, writers, philosophers, you know, this is where they hung out in the past, and they still do now. Colette, Picasso, Hemingway, you know, you have the wonderful Boulevard Saint-Germain and Boulevard Saint-Michel. So, you know, it's got a whole different vibe than, you know, the Place Vendôme and Rue Faubourg Saint-Honoré, but still very Parisian. I mean, I can't say which side I actually like the best, because I don't know if it's both sides to most people's personalities, but it's cool. And both sides have beautiful architecture and different. I'm going to use a couple of phrases that other people have used to express how they describe the Seine, you know, because these are my feelings, but the Seine has been described as the mirror which the city finds its own reflection. And I know that sounds, you know, kind of almost now passé and trite, but I still think it's there. I think there's something subtly about this river and how it flows through this city. And really, you have to go back and forth all the time. It's rare that you just stay in one place. It's poets, painters, novelists, architects, lovers, and even tourists have understood this powerful attraction. The Seine today, you know, I've kind of been describing it as the way it's been before, but the Seine today, you've got now with all that beautiful architecture. In between, you've got floating restaurants. You've got discos. You've got cafes. You have the wonderful museums and parks. All these benches now. I mean, they have really made it to where Parisian government, they want tourists and Parisians to come and seek solace near the river. So there are lots of benches. There's lots of opportunities to be close to the river that you can enjoy it. And that's pretty different. You know, and lots of rivers here, again, especially if you have the ocean-going vessels, you can't really get that close. I mean, you know, there's just too much industrialization around it. But this is not the case in Paris. So that is a long answer, Catherine, to your question. But basically, when I think of the Seine, I think that is where the real soul of Paris flows. There's something about that energy or that river and the way it still is today and how it evolved that is key to making Paris so wonderful.
When you were last in Paris, you experienced a dinner river cruise, and you kind of mentioned that a little bit here. Was this a worthwhile excursion, and how would something like that work for a solo traveler?
Okay, well, you know, when you're a solo traveler, finding things to do at night, you know, and things that you feel like you will really want to do that are not too corny or whatever, that you feel safe going to, that's really worthwhile. That can be a challenge sometimes because, you know, things at night kind of get a little bit, you know, on the more provocative side. So you have to just figure out what are you going to do with yourself at night a lot of times. And I'm the type of person, I don't like to just stay in my hotel. Now, I do stay in very nice hotels, and usually that's not a bad thing. But I want to do things at night, but I want to be safe, and I want it to be worthwhile. I don't want it just to be to go to say I have something to do. So I do night tours. Some of those can be enjoyable, and some of them, yeah, after I do them, I think, yeah. But a city in the night changes totally in so many ways, and especially beautiful cities that are lighted up quite gorgeous now. And the lights have gotten, you know, light art and everything that they do now with lights. Oh, man, they're doing some beautiful things to really enliven some, you know, gorgeous architecture, et cetera. So there are lots of things to see at night and to see cities at night that are completely different now than they were 15 years ago. I'm always looking for something that I think I will enjoy doing at night. So in this trip, I had gone to Paris in November. And during my pre-trip research, I was Googling cool food things to do in Paris. Because, you know, food, oh God, French food is enough to make you move there. I mean, it is so good. You cannot believe how good it is. Well, I was doing this research and I came up on a dinner cruise that looked quite nice. It was the Bateau La Calife dinner cruise. The retrofitted, beautiful barge really caught my eye because I have always wanted to river barge either through some of the canals and tributaries in England or in France. And I never had a chance to do that. But this particular restaurant barge, very beautiful on the internet, lots of mahogany, and it just looked like it was pristine, antique vessel that I thought, oh, this looks really nice. And I liked what I read. So I made some notes, but I still, you know, hadn't decided. But one of the things that when I read about it, it kind of keyed my memory that one good experience and one bad experience that I want to share with you because it does, it is will help you decide whether you want to go on the Bateau La Calife. But about 48 years ago, the first time I went to Paris, which was, it was really part of my first European trip, I ended up meeting an elderly French couple, a very aristocratic couple that my father had known during and after World War II. And he told me, Astrid, go see if Madame Hocquart and Jacques Lacroix are still alive, because he had gotten quite close to these people. She was an extremely famous photographer. If you look up House of Hocquart, she did all of the famous politicians, movie stars, writers. I mean, she was famous in her own right. She did black and white, and she took photographs of anybody who was anybody. And actually, my father had, you know, a whole collection of photographs that she had done of him. And my father was very handsome. And so those are some of my cherished memorabilia from my father and his life, his interesting life. But so he told me, Astrid, see if you could, if they still live at Avenue on Avenue Foch. So I had the address, and I went and rang the bell. And it's a big, you know, typical, what they call the hotel. It has like these grand stairs that go up and all these different rooms that they own the building, I had found out, and they have rented out some of the rooms. But, oh my gosh, there he is. Jacques Lacroix came to the open this big, huge door. And I introduced myself, and I thought he couldn't believe his ears. So we went up. It was a beautiful time. You know, I had, I'm sure, coffee and whatever. I can't remember what I ate, but, you know, she gave me two things from her personal collection, which I thought was very, very sweet. But she said, one of the things I'm going to treat you to, Astrid, is a dinner cruise on the Bateau Mouge. And this was 48 years ago. So I thought, oh, that sounds cool. So dinner cruise on the Seine. So she had all this arranged for me, and I went and got on the cruise. And that evening, I'll never forget it. It blew my mind. The French music, the food was so wonderful. It was so upper class. I thought, oh my God, here I am, a Louisiana girl, doing this, being treated by my father's good friends. I mean, it was just one of those magic moments to me. So that was great. Well, then about 25, 30 years ago, I told my husband, we had our first time to Paris, we've got to go on the Bateau Mouge. Oh, God, this was wonderful. Well, I book it and everything. We go on it. It was awful. And I shouldn't say that, because I really don't ever criticize anything. I'd rather just not go there. But it was nothing like it was the first time I went. Because now, you know, lots of things that are geared to tourists have become so touristy. And this particular Bateau Mouge vessel, and they have many of them, so I want the listeners to know. And there's a few, you can go in a higher category, but still, it is, it's not like the Bateau La Calife. And this is the reason why I'm bringing it up. So the whole experience was very touristy, large boat, the food was not high quality, and, you know, I went, oh, never again.
Disappointment upon disappointment there.
Yeah, and that was, it really was a disappointment. So when I read about this Bateau La Calife, I thought, well, I don't know.
Do I dare try again?
Yeah. So, but... what I saw on the website was kind of compelling. First of all, it said it was a cruising restaurant where the food was prepared on board by a chef and his team using fresh daily products. So I thought, well, you know, that sounds pretty good. I'm still not sure because I might be exaggerating. Okay. But the vessel here again was so beautiful. You know, this antique river barge, it just looked really, really fine. You know, it had like two outdoor observation decks. It was very small, and that is a big plus. Like the Bateau Mouge and even the Bateau Paris or Parisienne, they're much bigger. And this was a very small, intimate vessel. So that, I like that. The photo showed you had a red carpet, did great gangplank to go in, and, you know, beautiful antique French chairs, lots of wood, you know, even in the furniture, white linen tablecloths, tuxedoed waiters, you know, it just, you know, you thought, nah, this, you know, this, I wouldn't mind splurging for this. So, you know, basically, it had a little bit of a tourist feel, but it had great reviews, TripAdvisor, Certificate of Excellence, 5 stars. Also, it said it was 2 to 2.5 hours. You boarded first, like at around between 7:45 and 8:15. And what you did was, you know, you kind of got acclimated to everything, and they had music, etc., and you could be served an aperitif. With the meal comes, you know, a glass of champagne and your wine, but you know, gave you time to kind of get yourself ready for a beautiful, peaceful cruise down the Seine. And you know, the French, when they eat, they don't want to eat fast. Even now, they still, especially at dinner, they want it to just kind of flow. So that's why I think, you know, even before you get there, you've got quite enough time to have a drink or two and begin the flow of the evening. So, you know, that's nice. And, you know, it said that you had, like I said, champagne and a light starter. The cruise started at around 8:50. You board on the left bank, which is right there across from the Louvre, which excellent location, and also was a great location for me because my hotel, the Hotel Regina, was across the street on the right bank of the Louvre, so I could walk on that bridge right there. It was wonderful. But one tip, wear good shoes. Do not walking shoes, or some kind of, if you want to wear fancy shoes, you have to be able to walk on some very big, old, uneven cobblestone. I wore some 4-inch heels. It was, I don't know how I made it to the boat and back, but I just wanted to dress up because it just looked so pretty. Well, don't do that. Okay, well. And the cost of it was you could have 2 different types of meals, either a 3-course or a 4-course. So it's between $75 to $135. It's quoted in euros. So, you know, it depends on, you know, yeah, exactly. And they have extensive drink menu, lots of great French wines to choose from, champagnes. You have all kinds of different cocktails, you know. I mean, it's really nice. You can book online. You have to make a reservation, obviously, and you put down a deposit. So you pay the balance when, you know, after you finished your meal. Because your drinks, and there are a few little things that extra that they'll charge. But it's not one of these, you know, like, oh, they'll charge you for everything. No. Some of the choices on the menu were marinated lamb, fillet of sea bass, grilled prawns. You had your steak tartare, goat filled cheese pastries, foie gras, and chocolate lava cake, which is basically flourless chocolate cake, apple crisp with caramel. I mean, you know, the food wasn't like very, very sophisticated, fine French cuisine, but it was pretty much a staple menu. But it was very well prepared, and that says everything. I mean, because the French can take an omelet and make you want to feel like you've died, gone to heaven. So it's all in the love and the preparation and how they do it. And it was, you know, I enjoyed it very much. The food was delicious. Okay, so besides the nightly cruise, the Bateau La Calife also cruises in the afternoon for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. So that was the basic information that I got off the internet. And their website is calife.com. So I read it, and I thought about it, and I went, do I really want to do this? You know, I've been to Paris numerous times. I had that fabulous first experience with the dinner cruise. Then I had that other experience that made me not want to do it. But I kind of thought, well, I'm going to do it, because I didn't have a whole lot of things that I had pre-planned for the night. And now that I have my website and I blog and I have this podcast, photographs are very important to me, as well as I'm always looking for things that I can share with my listeners or my readers that are affordable luxury, good ideas that they can consider doing when they're traveling. So I thought, yeah, I need to give this another chance. So here's my review. Okay, from the minute that I crossed, when I got there after being, just with those heels was horrible. But the minute I crossed that red carpeted gangplank into the vessel itself, I thought, oh, this is going to be great. Because you can tell usually, you know, just the detail and the cleanliness and the crispness of the atmosphere and everything. You can tell if it's going to be good or if it's just, you know, it's just another night and these people are, you know, can't wait till they go home, the service personnel. So I could just tell. The vessel really was more beautiful than the pictures itself. And I think it's because of the quaintness or something about the feel inside once you get inside. And it was has big, big, beautiful windows, you know, that you know, obviously have wood molding. So you get to see everything along the riverfront wonderfully. I mean, it's down at waist length, so you see everything. So you can take pictures in the boat and then outside of the vessel. The promo said it has two observation decks. And that was very nice, except the night that I went, oh, it was just so cold in Paris. It was so cold. I felt like I was in St. Petersburg, Russia. But I went outside and took pictures anyway, because some of the sights, and I'm going to talk about them, I mean, they were just like breathtaking. I couldn't believe that I saw that in the daytime. It didn't do anything for me like it did in the evening. It's just unbelievable. So it did. The vessel itself did have a very authentic French feel, not really touristy, and I could see how the locals would even go on this and enjoy it. So that is kind of the stamp of this, that this is something the locals would even do, and I don't know about the others. The champagne and the little small bite, which was a cheese puff. The champagne was delicious, but the cheese puff was heroic. It was so unbelievable. I don't know how the French can make something that's so basic and really not that, you know, interesting. I mean, it melts in your mouth. the intense flavor that they can put in this extra light pastry. It's just a small bite. I mean, here again, it's another die and gone to heaven event over something that you would probably not even pay attention to or even want to taste if it wasn't served to you as part of the introduction to the meal. It was just extraordinary. I mean, I went, oh my God. I know I'm going on and on, but the French can really make something extraordinary. Okay, so I was seated right in the front on the right-hand side, and they have little bistro tables on both sides. They have a couple in the middle and the back, but the bistro tables can be put together if they're more, you know, if you're not solo. But this was a great place to take pictures because I didn't have anybody else in front of me. Now, the doors going out on the observation deck was right there, but that was good too. So I had a nice place. I wasn't set out in the middle where I'd be, you know, like the singular traveler with, you know, nobody joining her. But so they seated me in a very nice place where I could be relaxed, enjoy my meal, and take some good photos. So I like that very much. I particularly ordered, I had salmon tartare. I'm a tartare nut. Whether it's beef, steak tartare, salmon tartare, I'll try any tartare. Probably if I ever get sick, really sick from some bug, it'll be because I tartare myself.
You tartared it.
I can't help it, though. I just love it. I chose the marinated lamb. I'm another person who loves lamb. Lots of people don't like it, but I really like it. It was delicious. Cheese plate, and then the apple crisp with the caramel, because in France, they have the best apples. I've gone all through Normandy, and their apples are, oh. And then, of course, some French red Burgundy wine. The meal was as good as I could have imagined it to be. It wasn't Michelin star, but it was really good. So I was quite pleased. And I mean, I ate everything and I was stuffed at the end, but it was that good. So, and I usually don't stuff because I'm not a stuffer, but this was good enough to make me want to stuff. So that was the food part. Now, for the best part of the evening, the cruising itself. Now, for some reason, I didn't remember how beautiful it really was. And maybe because, like I talked about earlier, the lighting now that you see in different cities that they're doing is just extraordinary. So I think that was probably a lot of why it was so much more beautiful this time in the evening. So you start cruising down the Seine. It's basically a circle that you know, go to one end, come back in the other. But you see this gorgeous Parisian architecture. And, I mean, you know, in the night, it is so elegant and majestic that it's stunning. That's all I can say. It actually makes you feel like, God, I wish I could live here. And I know that sounds kind of childish or whatever, but I know, well, I don't know, but I surmise that many people have the same kind of like, this is so fabulous, that they wish that they could keep this, these sights that they're seeing, this is what they're feeling. So Paris along the Seine at night is fabulous. The Louvre, I mean, it's got to be one of the most gorgeous buildings ever designed and constructed in the world still. It is knocked out, got it going on, I think. The Grand Palais and the Petit Palais. You can't quite see them real well during the daytime. And they're not exactly right on the Seine, but they're real close. At night, their beautiful domes stand out and the lighting. They're much more like Palais. I mean, you know, you just see them more, I think. The Musée d'Orsay, the big train station that I talked about, they've got it just, it's looking really spiffy. That's gorgeous. The Notre Dame. Now, this was, I mean, this is when the tour was really, everybody was like getting floored at how beautiful the buildings and the things that we were seeing along the river. It was lighted up so wonderfully. You could see the lace details in the motifs on the outside of the church. You can't see that amazing. In the daytime. You don't see. Yeah. But at night, oh my God, everybody was like, their breath was taken away. It was unbelievable. And then on the way back, when you see the flying buttresses and the way there, I mean, it is like, it's more beautiful at night than in the daytime, especially on this cruise, because it comes right up on you after this bridge. And I mean, it's just like, oh my God. I mean, it's just fabulous. I mean, just to go and cruise and see that building without even eating, I think the cruise is worth it. Because it's absolutely mind-bogglingly gorgeous. Okay, so you pass the Notre Dame. Then the Piste de la Résistance. At the kind of at the end of the line before you turn around, there it is, the Eiffel Tower. And they have the Eiffel Tower lit up beautifully. And so you're cruising up on it and you're going, you know, I can't believe they came up with this artificial steel structure for that expo a long time ago when Art Nouveau started and everything. And it's still so special, that it really is so special. Well, you're seeing it with these lights and you're going, oh God, this is fabulous. Then they start at 10 o'clock, the lights start twinkling. I mean, the whole boat was screaming in ecstasy. It was so beautiful because it just starts and everybody was like electrified. I mean, it was something else. And it was one of these magic moments that every now and then you have when you travel that just come out of the blue. I mean, nobody expected them to turn on, you know, the the dancing machine, but it made it even more unbelievable. So it was a magic moment. And, you know, obviously you could see that if you go walk down and get on the subway and come out. But to do it cruising down the Seine and you can take these pictures and you can get, it gets up pretty close. So you get fabulous pictures. And I got fabulous videos cruising down up and past these wonderful sites. So if you like to take pictures, you know, and especially at nighttime, you're going to get some one-of-a-kind beautiful pictures at night on this cruise. And then after my 2.5 hours of cruising and 2 glasses of wine, I mean, I really was like, I'm so happy to be alive. I know that sounds maybe a little passé too, but it was a beautiful evening. I thought, you know, this was a very well spent $135. And it was unexpected, the quality of it. So, you know, as a solo traveler, I really would say that this was an authentic, nice evening. The chef and the food, you know, it was well prepared. And there's, you know, only in Paris and only on the Seine can you see this fabulous part of the French of France. It's just, it really is special.
Before we wrap up here, Astrid, I have a question. I'm trying to figure out the best way to ask it of you. Kind of, I want to go really big picture. So we talked before, you mentioned this dinner river tour, and you and I talked about some of these activities. And even with this, the sort of the disappointing boat tour that you had that you were describing that was many years ago, some of these types of activities can be quote, touristy, and that, but sometimes doing touristy things can be great, as we've talked about. Can you share some insights about doing touristy things and how we balance touristy things with so-called authentic activities?
Right. Well, let me tell you, unfortunately, wherever you travel, there are some things that are must-dos, because that's usually what makes a place so unique. Something different happened there, and they're interesting, and you know, people want to go and experience seeing them or whatever, or try to get into how special they are. Well, because most everybody wants to do those things, all these tourists, throngs of tourists, make the whole experience definitely less intimate and a lot more stressful. I think all the time, because of the way tourism has gone now and the way a lot of tourist sites and activities are organized, it's similar to going through security at an airport. It's like, you know, and then you cannot really experience what you're going to see. So that is, that's a real issue now. So number one, if you can avoid going during the high seasons, don't, you know, go in the off season, because that will help with all of these, what I call the throng of the tourist, that you really can't. So
the sheer numbers.
Yeah. So during those touristy, you know, going to those touristy places, and I don't mean that touristy is bad, but just know that it is, you're going to experience that if you go in the high seasons. What I do on my trips is I always like to basically draft a daily itinerary before I go. And I do this in a real loose form. But I'm the kind of person, when I travel solo, I like to have somewhat of a theme or a focus. And, it, you know, because if I have this, like, you know, informal itinerary, it does help me with my time management, and it helps me, really not miss something that I want to, or decide if I'm running out of time what I want to do, and I've already done these things in this particular area, and I have to go to another area the next day, but this one thing is way over across town, and do I really want to do it? You know, and things like that. So I do that. But what I'm always looking for is, what is unique about this place? Why is it worth visiting? And what do I want to get out of my visit? You know, sometimes I just want to lie around the swimming pool at a beautiful resort. That's all I want to do. I don't want to go and see anything. But then there are other times that I really want to get into the culture. And so I will want to try to experience a little bit of everything, the spiritual side, the history of the place, visual arts, performing arts. I'll go to a lot of museums and art galleries, the theater, live performances, trying to get a feel of their classical arts as well as their street art. Then the food and the cuisine, street food, fine dining, bistros, everything. I try to do it all to key in on, what their consciousness on there. 'Cause I made reference to the omelet. I mean, the French, they make an omelet that is, I mean, there's no race in this world can prepare an omelet like the French. I mean, it's enough to make me want to get on a plane and go to France tomorrow.
For an omelet.
an omelet, that wonderful French bread, green salad, and a glass of crisp white French Burgundy. Or Burgundy. Oh, God. To die for. Okay, let me keep going. you know, and then, you know, I like to also do gardens and parks, and because I like flora and fauna and all of that. So I do a lot of that. But, you know, you might want to do hiking or kayaking or biking. I know in some places I'll even take a bike tour. But so if you have this kind of pre-trip loose itinerary, it will help you once you're there. And you can go over it with your concierge and he or she'll help you make decisions. So, but what I do is I take things I want to do and then the touristy things, the must-dos, and I try to create a good balance of that. Like on this recent trip that I went to Paris, my whole trip was focused on fashion and a redo of my look, re-energize my feminine vibe. And here we're talking about, you know, the River Seine and what you do. And it's this feminine power that goes through Paris is just wonderful. It just keeps life alive. So I don't know. I think it was something in my subconscious to go to Paris. So, but during all of this, all these activities focused on myself, I wanted to do some touristy things too. I mean, I didn't want to just go and do everything, you know, to try to make Astrid look better. So I decided to, go on that dinner cruise on the Bateau La Calife. I did a walking tour that was kind of fashion-oriented, a Coco Chanel walking tour, but it still took me through Place Vendôme and Rue Cambon and Rue Rivoli, all the places that she hung out in this small area. And it was wonderful because I got a lot of information about the history of the area and how she interrelated it to it, especially all this information about how she, you know, she had a boyfriend that was a Nazi officer, and how the French ended up not liking her, and she left Paris, and then her comeback. I mean, all these things, you know, a lot of times you don't hear the negative, and I don't mean negative, but you don't hear some aspects of very famous people that have changed the world. You know, you don't hear that much about it. But boy, this woman who was this young tour guide, she was great. I mean, she was, it was really worth it. But it was a touristy thing to do. Also, the Bar Hemingway, or the Hemingway Bar in the Hotel Ritz. I hate to say that's touristy. Long time ago, it wasn't. But it kind of is now. But it is a great thing to do because the bartender there is so famous. He's touted as the most famous celebrity barman in the world. His last name, I think his first name is Conan. It might be Conan O'Brien. Catherine. My producer, Catherine's last name is O'Brien. Yeah. So, but that was a touristy thing, as well as the Sainte-Chapelle Cathedral. Oh my gosh, that cathedral is so famous for its all the walls on the top two-thirds of the cathedral are stained glass. I mean, it is like knock your socks off. It's more spectacular than Notre Dame in terms of the stained glass. And I had never been there. So those were some of the touristy things that I, and then, lunch at Cafe Fouquet and a couple other places that are kind of, they were very, you know, she. And now they're still kind of she, but they tend to be a little bit more touristy. So I combine that with all of this, you know, redo Astrid activities. And that gave me a good balance. You know, and that's what I'm trying to depict. If you are going for, say, just a veg out, maybe you ought to decide a couple of things that you want to do to get out of the total veg out, unless you're just kaput and you just don't want to. Because, you know, say you love gardening. go visit the botanical gardens, or, you know, do a garden tour, or the secret gardens. I mean, I don't garden myself, but I love gardens, and I have had some of the most wonderful experiences going to Italian gardens, French gardens, botanical gardens, all these gardens. So my point being is, mix up your itinerary with the must-dos that are touristy and the things that interest you. So that, you know, that's what I think, I think you end up getting more of your, travel experience, because you kind of get outside of the box. And when you start doing that, there are always these magic moments that kind of come to you. So it's important that you do that. Now, one of the touristy things that, you know, I recommend, and this is ultra touristy, but is the hop on, hop off bus and their tours, especially if you've never been to a city before and you have, you know, more than 3 days. It is a great way to get your bearings, to get some good trivia information. They always have, you know, ethnic music, and, you know, they explain every important building that you're going by and the significance of it and anything that was unique and blah, blah, blah. But what it does, well, especially if you do it right after you get off the plane and you're jet lagged, but you can't go to sleep, just get on that hop on, hop off bus, get on top floor, let that wind blow your hair and just veg out. But you're absorbing your environment. You're absorbing the place. And then you kind of will know a little bit more. I want to make sure I go to that church, or I'm not so sure. I'm not going to go to that flea market or whatever. Okay. So that's a very touristy thing. And I always, you know, suggest that. So that's what I'm talking about. Some touristy things with, you know, really what suits your personality and your interest, and kind of it, that helps you blend out, a real good travel experience. So that's, to me, the value of touristy things and why you have to do them.
I love your tip about the hop on, hop off. Speaking of tips, I know our listeners love your tips. Do you have any tips for how the solo traveler can enjoy the Seine? Just to go back to our famous river here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, real quick. First of all, there are two main options: cruising or walking. So that's it. So cruising, there's several ways, and this is not with the dinner cruise. This is strictly a sightseeing cruise. You've got, again, the Bateaux Mouges. The Bateaux Mouges Corporation, they were the first that did any tourist activities on the Seine, but they have a sightseeing and a dining cruise. Like I said, they're the oldest cruise boat company in Paris. They have the biggest boats, and, you know, double decker with open tops. You know, you'll see them going up and down the river with the orange seats. And they have like the hop on, hop off bus. They have recorded narration of what you're seeing in multiple languages. You can pick it up at the Pont de Alma on the right bank. And it's good if you want to take pictures, open top pictures. And it's $15 a ticket. But be forewarned, they're huge boats and they're usually packed. And if that's not your cup of tea, pass. Okay. Then you've got the Bateaux Parisien Seine Cruises. Similar to the Bateaux Mouges, but they're medium-sized vessels. And they're only one level, and they're closed boats. So you don't quite get the open air on the top, you know, taking the pictures. But they have the recorded audio. They have two stops where you can get them, get on the boat. One's near Notre Dame. The other one's near Eiffel Tower. $20 a ticket. So it's a little bit more expensive. than the Bateau Mouche. Same kind of thing, but not a humongous vessel. Then you have the what's called the Bateau Bus. I've never taken it, but lots of people use it. It's basically a water taxi. It's like the hop-on, hop-off bus, but has no narration. 9 stops, 1 day pass, $10. Stops are great stops. Saint-Germain-des-Prés on the left. They do left and right banks. So you can do both banks. Notre-Dame, Jardin-des-Plantes, Hôtel de Ville, Louvre, Champs-Élysées, Eiffel Tower, Musée d'Orsay, and Beau-Grenelle, I think. But they stop for 20 to 25 minutes at each stop. And, you know, if you just want to not go on the metro and you want to go down the middle of Paris, that you can get off at each one of these stops and really delve into a particular neighborhood or arrondissement.
Look at you!
This is not a bad thing for $10 a day. I mean, yeah, it's really
awesome.
Not. But beware, in the summer, it's very hot and it's very crowded. So that's just know that. Then you've got your dinner cruises that, you know, this podcast is all about. 2 other cruise companies, or basically 3, Bateau Mouche again, that I mentioned. It's a 3-hour cruise. You can decide whether you want a 3 or 4-course meal. They have live music. You can select your dishes, and they have the menu online. I did not get the lower price, but the higher price, or the 4-course, is around $125. Large boats, very touristy. Bateau Parisien, 1.5 to 2.5-hour cruises. I've never been on this one, but this is the website says, again, 3 or 4-course gourmet meal. A la carte menu that you can select from, French bistro cuisine, live music, $88. Then they have another cruise that is very fine dining, $250 for 3 hours, open air deck, great picture taking. I've never been on Bateau Parisien, so I can't say, you know, I can't give you my opinion. This is just an option. Mm-hmm. Then you've got Don Juan II, Yachts de Paris. And this is by Guy Krenzer. Here again, I've never taken this particular cruise, but this is actually a yacht. And 5-course gourmet meal, very elegant setting, $250. So I don't know. It might be fabulous.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, really. I can't voice for anything but what I have shared with you. But I have to tell you, you know, as a blogger and now having my website, Astrid Solo Travel Advisor, you know, I focus on affordable luxury ideas, products, and services for solo travelers. And, you know, as I shared at the beginning of our show, the solo traveler nighttime activities and trying to decide what you want to do at night is one of the more challenging things about solo travel. But I have to say, if you're in Paris and you have the time and the opportunity, take this cruise on the Bateau La Calife. It's worth it. It's beautiful. And I know it'll be a fabulous memory. And when you hit the Eiffel Tower, you will have the same reaction as all your boat mates, because it is something that it is a magic moment.
Okay, listeners, we know that you want to get over to Paris right away, unless you're listening to us in Paris. Then you will know everything that we're talking about already.
Well, maybe not if you haven't
gone. You can be a tourist in your own home. We should have a show on that sometime, about touring your own home, being a tourist in your own city.
Let me tell you, I have experienced some things. I'm from Louisiana, and I've always been very inquisitive, love adventure, exploring. So I've done a lot of different things in Louisiana. And specifically in New Orleans, I had attended a conference about 4 years ago, and part of the conference was a tour of New Orleans. I said, I'm not going on a tour of New Orleans. I know everything about New Orleans. I went on this tour, and I'm telling you, I was amazed what I didn't know. So that is a good topic, Catherine.
Okay. Well, look forward to hearing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you have to pack, we want to help make your packing just a teeny tiny bit less stressful. You know how you can do that is with a packing list. Conveniently, Astrid has such a packing list that she's willing to give to you. Just go to astridtravel.com. Right there on the homepage, there's a place you can put in your email and get the packing list to download right away. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify. We invite you to subscribe to this show. The subscribing really helps other solo travelers find this valuable information. You can also just see the show on astridtravel.com. We love to hear your comments. We would love a review. All that is good stuff. Thank you so much for listening. Bonne nuit. Thank you. We'll see you next week on Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.